Verbally Effective with Ina Esco is an interview-style podcast that intersects art, culture, politics, and entertainment with a Memphis focus. Each week, I'm joined by a featured guest with roots in Memphis. Verbally Effective delves into each guest's personal journey to uncover the incredible stories fueling their purpose, the highs and lows of their pursuits, and how through their passion, they are moving the culture forward. Greetings, and welcome to another edition of the Verbally Effective Podcast with your host, the double E, Ina Esco. You know, this is the podcast that intersects art, culture, politics, entertainment with a Memphis flair. And today I have a legendary entertainer in the building with me. You may have seen him on movies and shows with Jamie Foxx, Players Club. He is one of the original writers for the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and he is currently working on a plethora of projects. I am talking about the legendary comedian, actor, artiste, Alex Thomas.
You are really good.
You think so?
Can I tell you, you just turned into a different person from the person I met
five minutes ago. Do.
You turned your radio voice on.
Yes.
Because right before this, you were like, okay, so tell me a little bit about yourself.
Right, you know I had to warm you up.
And then you was like, really? For real?
I had to warm you up.
And then all of a sudden, the professional voice came on. Yes, that's right. And then you took all the notes. I was like, is this artificial intelligence?
I am artificial intelligence.
You're really good.
You know, like 25 years in the game. You know how we do.
Come on, man. We both triple OGs in this game.
Yes, and you've been in the game 30 plus.
This actually is my 30-year anniversary this year.
How does it feel?
It feels great to still be relevant. It feels great. You know what I mean? Because, you know, shout out to a lot of the guys that I started out with that are nowhere to be found for whatever reason, though.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? It's really hard to stay relevant. You ask any type of art form, especially but us in particular, let's say rappers, comedians, acts. Yes. It's really
entertainment.
Yeah. It's still hard to, the word truly is relevant. Because you could have been funny in a different era, but have nothing to say today.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's weird. By me being relevant, I have, obviously, the people that have been on this journey and this ride with me for 30 years.
Yes.
Then I also got the kids that come up to me that know me for different things.
See?
Like, the hip-hop world knows me from different things than the people that, you know, all they did was watch my TV and movies. Mm-hmm. Then I get the people that be like, I had no idea you were on all these cartoons, Family Guy.
See what I'm talking about?
And you know, Motel Magic. And then you get people that be like, wait a second, I just know him as a comedian. I didn't know he acted, or people that have seen my movies but haven't seen my stand-up. So I think, first of all, thank you, Jesus.
Amen.
Thank you, God, because without him, none of this would have been possible.
Yes.
But he made it a lane for me to kind of do them all. And by doing it all, it gave me more longevity.
Yes.
Meaning, you know, it wasn't just stand-up. Mm-hmm. You know, it's producing, it's writing, it's animation.
Yes.
It's,
you have a lot of irons in the fire, Mr. Thomas.
There you have it. That means a lot of different checks.
Okay. And we loved all those incomes right there,
right.
Multiple incomes. Let's start at the beginning, Mr. Thomas. Let's start there because you are originally.
You don't have to call me Mr.
I'm
Thomas.
Call you, Alex.
You can call me Alex.
Alex.
Okay.
I think it's in my head now.
Thank
Alex.
You, though. I appreciate that. But yeah.
Alex, that kind of feel, you know what, you're reminding me when people say yes ma'am to me. I be like, wait a minute, don't call me yes ma'am.
You ain't gotta say ma'am.
Right. It makes me feel away. But
right.
Alex, let's start at the beginning because I know you are originally from Los Angeles.
Born and raised.
Okay.
24/7, 365, twice on Sundays.
Twice on Sundays.
Can okay. I get an amen?
Amen.
Okay. Can I get an amen one more time?
Amen.
You feel me?
Okay.
So yeah, I'm just LA.
LA all day.
Born and raised, been there my whole life.
Tell me about the young Alex Thomas.
Wow.
What was the young Alex into growing up in LA? Were you on the good side of LA, the bad side, the middle side? Tell me about your upbringing, Alex.
How much time do we have?
Come on, give me the high level version, though.
I'm gonna try to make a long story short. I was born and raised in South Central LA, so yeah, you got to think about it. 70s and 80s when it was at its height. You know, gang banging, half my family Crips, half my family Bloods.
Really?
Oh yeah, I grew up in the heart of all that shit. But I was the only black kid in an all-white private school for 10 years.
Okay, that's how you avoided that.
And that's like, my parents, thank God to my parents for, you know, keeping me. They're like, look, you're not going to get caught up in all that shit like everybody in this neighborhood. Yes. And that's one reason why Will Smith and I got along so well, because the same way he grew up in Philly was kind of like the same way I grew up in L.A. But the difference was I can cuss.
Yes.
I came home to niggas every day. Mm-hmm. I came home to gunshots and the crazy shit every day. And, but I had about 6 hours of relief in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
I'm talking two blocks away from Rodeo, richest street in the world, but I'm the only black kid in this school. So it gave me diversity in life. Mm-hmm. It gave me, yeah, I'm coming home to some crazy shit, but I'm also around these rich white kids. So I'm seeing another world. So in other words, long story short, I always tell people, by 13, mm-hmm. I had been to more bar mitzvahs than barbecues.
And with you being the only black, did they treat you?
Well, they loved me. You know what? I was that dude.
Really?
I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't know I was going to be a comedian. I wasn't saying in third grade, you know, I want to be a comedian one day. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to be the next Richard Pryor. No, I was just like the class clown, best sense of humor. It just happened. I wasn't mm-hmm. trying to be that. And I was just myself, and obviously coming from a world that they knew nothing about, my flavor, you know, I kind of got a little bit of them. That's why there's that side of me that for years in the hood, you sound like a white boy. Mm-hmm. You act like a white boy. I used to be like, holy cow, whatever gave you that idea?
Okay. Okay.
And you know, I got teased. Got to think about it. Growing up in South Central LA where everybody's gangbangers, and here I am playing soccer, mm-hmm. hockey, golf.
It saved you.
Yeah, I'm good friends with my father.
Okay.
You know, a lot of stuff that the brothers weren't doing, mm-hmm. I was doing. But little did I know, that was real rounding me.
Yes, sir.
For what I grew up to be, because I was always the type of stand-up comedian mm-hmm. that can go into any room. Mm-hmm. I always tell people I could be in the hood of Memphis, Brooklyn, Compton, Florida, and then the next night be doing a snowboarding convention in South Dakota.
Right.
And kill them, but still be the dude that I am, not changing for them. You know what I mean? TV helped a lot with that too.
Yeah.
By writing on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, it was such a universal show. I mean, I have people to this day that come up to me and go,
and how did that situation even happen?
Oh, I'm going to tell you. But I have people that come up to me that go, I learned how to speak English from my particular country, whether they grew up in Austria, France, Japan, or Nigeria. They're like, we watched The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Alfred Kainga, comedian, he told me that. He told me.
Wow.
He told me that. We did a podcast episode, and he told me that was one of the influences, that was one of the motivations for him to become a comedian. But he used to watch it because, you know, he's from, I want to say, Nigeria?
Yeah, Nigeria.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's crazy. We didn't know. I always talk about this. I was just a young comic going to work every day, being funny and getting paid to do it. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that we were going to influence an entire generation. Like, you take somebody like J. Cole, who's a super dope rapper, one of his biggest songs. First line, first things first, rest in peace, Uncle Phil.
Mm.
For real, you're the only father that I ever knew. Like, it really, I kind of got chills talking about that because we didn't realize there was a whole generation of dudes our age that daddy wasn't there.
That's true.
They truly tuned in to Fresh Prince of Bel-Air or the Cosby Show to be like, that's what a daddy do?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what somebody does?
Fresh Prince changed the game for all of us.
Yeah.
Indeed.
And I tell the story, I have the classic right place at the right time story.
Tell it.
That is the story of my life and career. I remember the day like it was yesterday, July 2nd, 1992.
Wow.
I was a broke stand-up comic. I had $11 in my pocket. Caught the bus to the Laugh Factory up in Hollywood. Sat in a 13-hour line just to go up and do 3 minutes on amateur night.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't even been doing comedy 6 months. I didn't even have 3 minutes of jokes. I get off stage. Will Smith was sitting in the front row of the comedy club.
Mm.
Get off stage. And this was way before he was slapping people, right? So he's like, yo, man, you real funny. My name is, I was like, I know who you are. Mm-hmm. You know, my name is Alex Thomas. He's like, yeah, man, I got this brand new TV show. I was like, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I watch it every week. The show had only been on 2 years at that time.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, well, let me ask you a question, guys. Do you write? I'm like, you got a pen?
Okay.
I was like, he's like, well, do you think you can come down and help us with some funny stuff like what I saw on stage tonight? I was like, hold on, let me check my schedule. Yes, I'm available.
Okay.
He goes, when do you think you can come down? I'm like, now. Can I get a ride with
Let's
you?
Let's go now.
Yeah, and the rest is history. I was literally there the next day.
Okay.
I'm on the same stage that they shot Different Strokes on.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I'm in a room.
Studio B.
Studio 14, NBC, okay. Bob Hope Boulevard, in Burbank, California.
Okay.
And I'm in a room full of dudes that wrote some of the biggest TV shows of all time. The Happy Days. That guy right there did, you know, Dynasty. That guy right there did Friends. And that guy right there did big Seinfeld. Time. All these big. And I'm a dude fresh off the streets.
Fresh off the street. Now, let's get into that,
But I was
that,
employed
though.
By their boss.
Okay.
Shout out to Will Smith. I have nothing bad to say about that dude because he started my career.
Yeah.
We're still friends to this day, and he gave me that opportunity. And by writing on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, it opened up every single door for me. And
the let's get into the writing piece because that's a piece of the production that we don't see that piece of it, right?
Of course.
And it's such an important element to the final product, right? So when you went that first day and was introduced to the writing team.
Right, right.
How did they view you? How did you guys get into your processes? Like, tell me about that experience
you can tell
on the writing
boys,
end.
Those white boys looked at me kind of like, and who is this nigga? That was the look I got.
Okay.
But the flip side was, they obviously know I didn't jump the fence.
Okay.
I didn't pull out a gun and walk into the writer's room at gunpoint. Mm. I must be here for something. What they didn't know was, and Will stood up for me. And that's why I always, you know, have nothing but respect for him. He's like, he's never wrote anything but the jokes he got. Mm-hmm. The two or three jokes he got. But from what I saw last night,
he saw something in you.
This dude is funny. Mm-hmm. So it started out with me just being, you know, Will's personal joke writer.
Okay.
You know, all these guys, they'd have all these this funny stuff written down of what they think is funny. Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of like, you know, not knocking them, not being like, you're not funny, but just like, no, he wouldn't say that. He would say, because you got to think about it. Me and Will, we just happen to both be Libras. We're the same age. At that time, mm-hmm. let's just take early 90s, we both young guys in hip hop. Mm-hmm. I know what this brother would say. And I grew up in a house with a dad.
Okay.
And a mama that I respect. Mm. So a lot of times it's white guys writing what they think a young black man would say. Mm-hmm. I was truly like Will's voice. Mm-hmm. But here's what I say. Also in defense of that, so people don't get that misconstrued. People go, so you're the reason Will Smith was so funny. Absolutely not. Look at me how you look at Phil Jackson.
Yeah.
Phil Jackson was very lucky to possibly have coached two of the greatest guys to ever touch a basketball. Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan. He's not the reason Michael Jordan. No, he's just the dude that ran in the plays.
Right, and they have to deliver.
And we have to respect each other.
Yes.
But for the fact that he gave that to me, they had to start truly, really respecting. I'm going to give you an inside story. So every TV show since the beginning of time have live TV audiences, mm-hmm. right? Fresh Prince, no different. Shout out to D.L. Hughley, who was the warm-up for the live
was
audience.
He? Those I didn't know
years.
That.
D.L. Hughley was the warm-up comedian to do the live audiences back then, right? So every Friday, whatever, 250 people in that live audience.
Wow.
Right? So every TV show, you do two or three takes in front of the live audience. Mm-hmm. Will would always kind of save my takes for last. Mm. So in other words, you saw the first take. You saw the second take. You saw the third take.
It was a buildup. The buildup.
Did you hear that shit? And when he get those laughs in front of a live audience, he go, Alex Thomas, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow.
They had to respect it. Mm-hmm. Nothing against what they do, because what they did was very important. Mm-hmm. Those guys are structure. They help put those stories together. But it's like the whole history of sitcom writers, mm-hmm. probably didn't know this, but 85-90% of them tried to be stand-up comedians.
Didn't know that.
They all wanted to be comedians, or they did comedy at some time, but you can be a great writer but not a great performer.
Exactly.
Right? Great content, but just not know how to deliver it. Mm-hmm. I was really blessed to be a dude that can deliver a joke.
Yes, you're blessed to do both.
And also write a joke. Mm-hmm. So they had to respect it because at the end of the day, live audience don't lie. They die laughing on that third take. That's the cut we're keeping.
Wow. And you were a writer for 4 years.
Yeah, so, 93 to 97.
So what was the deciding factor for you to pivot?
When you say pivot, the show ended.
Okay. So we were at the end.
Right. So I came the last 4 years, and just for everybody that's watching, I was the light-skinned Aunt Viv.
You was the light-skinned. Oh, you was light-skinned Aunt Viv.
Daphne Maxwell Reed. I never even met dark-skinned Aunt Viv because gotcha. I came the week that she was gone.
Gotcha.
So my whole thing was with her. Now, when you say pivot, 97 was our last episode.
Okay.
And what's crazy is, man, I'll have kids that have come up to me to this day or parents and be like, say the kid is 23 right now. Mm-hmm. And they like, I had no idea you were a writer on this show. Do you know that's his favorite show right now?
My 10-year-old loves The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Which helps the point I'm about to say. Mm-hmm. Your 10-year-old, his 23-year-old, their entire career, I mean, not career, their entire life was reruns.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So that's still relevant to this day. Yes, absolutely. It's still relevant. So that makes me feel great.
I know it does.
It makes me feel great because I feel like to what started this whole thing, people will come up to me and ask me, do I still do the joke about blah, blah, blah? Mm-hmm. Like LeBron James came up to me and was like, man, do you do the joke about da, 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 da? I was like, how do you remember that? Man, I was 7 years old sitting on the couch with my mama watching Def Comedy Jam. I'm like, what's crazy? It's like, it's still funny today. I look at it like a great song. Mm-hmm. You don't, if Beat It comes on right now, if Thriller comes, you don't go that old shit. No, you're going to sing it. You're going to know every dance routine in the video.
Okay, because I'm grooving now. I can hear it.
Because it's great music and it stands the test of time. That's how I feel my comedy is. So by him bringing that up, I'm like, I ain't done that joke in years. I would have to watch an old Def Comedy Jam tape. But I'm going to try that tonight in Memphis, and then it killed.
Okay.
20 years later, I'm like, damn, I forgot.
Alex, you legendary. You legendary around here. But even with that being said, it ending in 97, and the word pivot, there had to be a next phase to your career.
I'm glad you brought that up. And guess what? By me riding on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, every single show that came after that, and I'm about to name damn near all of them.
Okay.
I was either in it, on it, warm up, writing, guest starring, basically every black show that came on from 97 to the early 2000s I was a part of.
Okay.
I was part of the Wayans Brothers show, 5 years. Living Single, 5 years.
Oh, I love Living
Moesha,
Single.
Moesha, 5 years.
Come on.
The Parkers, 5 years.
All the good shows.
I worked on My Wife and Kids. I worked on All of Us. Mm. I worked at like just basically all the black shows that followed because obviously Fresh Prince was a, you know, huge. I mean, even down to Martin. This is crazy. Shout out to my boy. I don't know how hip you are to hip hop, but I got to throw a name out.
Let me see.
Hottest dude on the planet right now. His name is Simba.
I know Simba.
I was just in the studio with him last night.
Okay.
Right? Because I love him. The dude's absolutely incredible. I saw a Dr. Dre just did a post like a week ago. And for the fact that Dr. Dre just said, my new favorite.
Dr. Dre said that?
Got like 2 million views just from him doing a freestyle on a radio show. Mm-hmm. But he's really dope and it's crazy how we met. We go to the same gym and all this. But my point of why I brought him up, we're in the studio the other night. 1 o'clock in the morning, weed smoke everywhere, a bunch of niggas, and we all look up at the TV, and it was an episode of me and Martin on Martin.
Oh, wow.
When I played Martin's crazy-ass cousin Compton Payne.
Oh, wow.
But I brought that up because, again, after Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, then obviously for me being and working all those, the biggest one for me was the Jamie Foxx show.
The Jamie Foxx show.
Which was my regular, was my first time being a regular on a huge TV show.
And how did you enjoy the Jamie Foxx show?
I loved it, man. I mean, I've been very lucky to work with legends. And that's how I learned. Mm-hmm. Being around Jamie every day. Mm-hmm. Being around Will Smith every day. Being around the Wayans family every day. You understand these names that I'm talking about is our culture. It is black culture, at least for the last 30, 40 years of our lives.
Yeah.
And I was a part of it, and it groomed me because no matter what I did, I never left the stage.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Even though I was 15 hours a day at Fresh Prince of Bel-Air,
you were still doing
I was
stand-up.
On this mic every night.
Okay.
All the years of me doing, and all of us, and the Wayans brothers, and Martin, and Jamie Foxx, this right here?
At night, you were going
this,
to perform.
This never went anywhere.
Now, how were you able to balance all of these diverse creative outlets at the same time? How do you do that?
Well,
how did you do it?
It's called do that or have a regular job. And nigga, I wasn't going to have a regular job. And I went to college for 20 minutes.
Okay.
I went to college for 20
Where
minutes.
Where did you go for 20 minutes?
University of South Central, USC.
You didn't like it.
It didn't work with the schedule. You know what? All my friends, you know, they ended up going to all the HBCUs, mm-hmm. you know. Hey, man, shout out
I'm
to the
HBCU grad.
What school?
Lemoyne One here
okay.
in Memphis.
Nothing but respect for all my friends that did that.
Mm-hmm.
Right after high school, I went to a college called Entertainment.
Yeah, you did.
And it stuck.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I was going to do. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Literally my career is one thing led to another.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know my real backstory was I started out on Soul Train at 15 years old.
Dancing?
I was a dancer on Soul Train.
What?
From 15 to 20 years old. So I'm a hood hero. I'm famous in the hood because that's the nigga that goes down the line every week. But remember, those are the years, that's the beginning of hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
So I always got to be specific when I say dancer. So niggas don't think poles and doing the splits and shit like that. No.
No.
Dancer meaning hip-hop, pop-locking, breakdancing, that kind of shit.
Gotcha.
And that's where I met Rosie Perez. Rosie and Perez and I became best friends. She got a lot. I'm just trying to give you the cliff notes.
I hear you.
She became the choreographer for this brand new show. It was called In Living Color. Mm-hmm. These girls, they were called the Fly Girls. I became her assistant to the Fly Girls.
Man, you've and been then, all over.
And then that's where I met Damon and Keenan Ivory Wayans.
Oh, wow.
And they were like, why are all these dancers laughing? Nigga, are you a comedian or a dancer? I was like, I'm a dancer, but do comedians get paid?
Mm-hmm.
Damon Wayans looked at me. You got to think about it. He was on top of the world at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Homie the Clown, selling out arenas all over America. He said, what'd you say? I said, do comedians get paid? He had just got off the road. I'll never forget. He had a fresh-ass Jordan sweatsuit on. This is 1991, and he pulled out $60,000 cash. $30,000 out of one pocket, $30,000 out of another. And the nigga threw it at me. He made it rain in 1991 before the words make it rain. And he's like, nigga, does that answer your question? Do we get paid? I was like, so where do I start?
Right.
A week and a half later, I tried stand up for the first time. Dancing was done.
Dancing
and that
was
OV. The beginning. That was the beginning of my journey.
Wow. You know what, Alex? I mean, you have really dropped some heavy, heavy gems on us already. But what I want to know is, what kind of challenges have you faced as a black comedian or comedian in general?
Right.
What have been some of those valleys you've been through?
First of all, entertainment is nothing but peaks and valleys.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing but a roller coaster. I'd be sitting here lying to you through my teeth if I said there was never any ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. No show lasts forever.
True.
You're only as good as your last show. You know, you're young. You're not quite aware of what you're going to do with this money that you're going to get. It's like you see with a lot of pro athletes.
Mm-hmm.
See it with a lot of entertainers, man. When you've been broke your whole life and all of a sudden you got $1 million in the bank, you can do some dumb shit.
Okay.
The thing that alleviated me from that is I was born and raised in L.A.
Mm.
So Hollywood didn't hit me the way it hit a lot of my peers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not here to mention names. I'm not that dude. Like everybody hit me $1 billion. I got $1 billion phone calls after Cat Williams was on Club Shay Shay. My career wasn't built on beef. Mm-hmm. Not my style. I have a whole different route. You know,
you do.
Every single name that Cat mentioned, I'm friends with every single one of them.
Even Cat. Mm-hmm.
We're super close.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, you got to think about the Cat Williams, the Mike Epps, the Kevin Hart. Those dudes came after me.
That's right.
I have nothing but respect for them and what they did. Mm-hmm. See, when you have confidence like that, I don't have to get into the beef.
Yeah.
Because I've always been able to hold my own.
And that feels good to not have to get in the beef.
Oh, it feels great. I don't have to shit on somebody to make you laugh at my jokes more. Come on, man. Mm-hmm. You watch my act. You mm-hmm. come see me at 111. You come tonight. You gonna see, oh, this nigga is nothing like those guys.
Yeah.
When you have that type of confidence, you don't have to go down that road. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what brought that up.
We were talking about some of the valleys and challenges.
Oh, yeah. I've always been my own dude. You know what I mean? And it's I really love that. A lot of people don't know how great it feels to be original. Mm-hmm. And people appreciate your shit.
Yeah.
Whatever you do in life, I can't be somebody that I'm not. One thing about me, no one ever go, man, that nigga sound like Chris Tucker. Or, he sound like Eddie Murphy.
You sound like Jamie. You do not sound like
Steve
anyone
Harvey
else.
Sound like, you know, all my parents, I know what it was, I was going to tell you. People, my peers, that's what I was talking about. Remember, I'm in a city where the whole world comes here to get famous. Mm-hmm. I'm born and raised in a city where the whole world comes here to make it in Hollywood. I'm born and raised here. I have a saying for that. You flew here. I grew here.
Okay.
So when people ask me, how did you not get caught up in the drugs and all the cocaine and all the craziness stuff? Because I grew up here. Four people in my family overdosed off that dumb shit in the 80s and the 90s. I saw it. So the last thing I was going to do is when I got in Hollywood, do dumb shit. You get what I'm saying?
I get it.
Back when, I know I might be jumping all over the place, but just people asking me about the whole Diddy situation and Cat Williams and all that. Like, yeah, man, I've always been my own man.
So you went to the freak-off party?
No. I've been to 1,000 Diddy parties.
1,000 Diddy parties.
But I'm always been my own man.
Okay.
So I'm not the dude that when they go, come to the cocaine room. Nigga, I don't fuck with cocaine.
Okay.
Come to the trafficking area. I don't do trafficking.
Not the trafficking area.
Come to gay night. Nigga, I don't do gay night.
Okay.
I'm here for the album release party. I'm here because this new dude named Biggie just dropped the album. Mm-hmm. I'm here for this brand new clothing line called Sean John, and there's 1,000 women here, mm-hmm. and I'm about to have me a ball. Grown shit, 21 and older.
Right.
So when people bring up all the craziness that happened, I can't speak on the craziness
because you didn't experience
it. I didn't go that night.
Right.
What I'm trying to tell you, I'm hearing all the allegations like everybody else. I'm like, wow. I'm going to bring up another name who I was really cool with. R. Kelly, right?
Oh, and I love R. Kelly music.
I love R. Kelly to death.
I still love R. Kelly music.
Do you understand? I know that whole Chicago connection. I got so many people in Chicago. It's damn near like my second city. I was the biggest fan I know every R. Kelly song by heart.
You don't think
I was blown away?
Nah, that was a shocker.
When I heard all that, I'm like, no, not him. Again, I didn't go to them parties.
Right.
I never saw a chick at the party with a Dora the Explorer backpack. I never was at a party where I see somebody on a pink skateboard rolling up in here. I didn't go that
night. None of that.
You get what I'm saying? So
I get what you're
all
saying.
These allegations with all these people, yes, yeah. I've been in the business 30 years. I've known them all, but there's obviously they do shit with different people.
You're right.
On different nights.
But let's dig into that a little bit, because one would say that some of these people in the industry that did go to the trafficking nights or the gay nights, they wanted a fast car to fame.
And that's why I keep steering us back to, I think because I grew there and they flew there. It's something about being a grounded LA dude. So basically, in a nutshell, I grew up around so much craziness and seeing it in so many different ways that when I got some success, now when I got into TV and I see people doing this shit, I'm like, nigga, did y'all go to a meeting first? Was there something, was there a pamphlet that you got? Did you have a, you know what I mean? I knew, when I saw it, I was blown away by a lot of the dumb shit. Mm-hmm. So basically, in a nutshell, yeah, I heard about all that craziness, but I wasn't, Eddie Murphy, right? Mm-hmm. My idol first, number one greatest of all time was Richard Pryor. Mm-hmm. But obviously, that's a different generation, so I never got
to see.
Yeah, but Eddie, when he first came up to me, be like, "You, dude, you are a funny ass nigga." Mm-hmm. You understand? That was like when Michael Jordan went up to Kobe Bryant and said, "Hey, man, you're a hell of a basketball player." Yeah. That's like when Muhammad Ali saw Mike Tyson for the first time. Remember, two different eras, didn't get to fight each other, but I'm a fan. Mm-hmm. You know how that makes you feel inside,
man.
So therefore, not only he became my friend. Turns out Eddie was a huge fight fan. Every single Mike Tyson, Floyd Mayweather, I couldn't even count how many fight parties Eddie had at that house. You got to think about it. A dude I grew up idolizing, and now I'm just a friend of the family.
To go.
You see the chicks that as a single dude?
Yeah.
You imagine, it was wall to wall, some amazing things that I had never seen in my life, and I was all for it.
Very young.
But I wasn't there. Same exact thing we're talking about with Diddy. Same exact thing we're talking. So when you hear people go, "Come on, Alex, you trying to tell me that nigga ain't gay?" First of all, I've never seen it. Mm-hmm. I hear the stuff just like I look at him as one of the greatest comedians that ever survived. I see him at these fight parties where there's 500 of us in this house. All I know is, nigga, that's Rick James at that table. That's El DeBarge right there. That's Prince right there. That's how I'm looking at it. Like, yeah. I got to meet everybody I grew up idolizing at this. I became a part of the circle. But the crazy shit, I guess I just didn't get invited to that.
You didn't.
But thank God I didn't. And
you know what?
I'm just being honest with you. You know what I mean?
Be honest. Transparency is key.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You may be getting an invitation from Eddie for the upcoming Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul fight. What do you think?
I am so excited because I was looking at Tyson training a 70-year-old Mike Tyson to whoop a nigga's ass.
I think he might pull it off, but Jake Paul ain't nothing to play with, though. Have you seen that brother, that country fan white boy?
I get it. Mm-hmm. But let's just be honest.
Okay.
Mike is a nigga that used to whoop niggas' asses on the streets and turned it into a profession, became one of the GOATs. And I just want to say he don't know what, Jake don't know what Tyson knows. Mm. And I just think that if Tyson catches him with one of them jaw-breaking ass right hooks or an uppercut that knock his teeth out, yeah.
You think he still got it?
Mike? I mean, obviously he's lost steps. Because you're not as in shape as you were 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But from what I'm seeing with his training,
it's been looking good.
He don't look like some amateur that's on one leg.
No, he don't.
Like, if you told me he had some crazy health problems, I'd be like, oh, maybe not. But from what I saw.
Yeah.
Hey, and I hope it's fair because I'm hearing all kind of crazy shit. Like, Mike's not going to wear headgear, but Jake is. Like, no, you can't
do that. Don't do that, Mike.
You can't do that. We're not all sitting in front of our TVs to watch a sparring match. Like, we want to see a real fight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, that's going to be interesting.
It's going to be very interesting. Now, Alex, let's get into the up-and-coming comedians. We see a lot of these young men, young ladies online garnering attention from the social media strategy, I would say. They're beginning there. They're not beginning on stages.
Right.
How do you feel about that approach to comedy? And also, what advice would you give to some of these aspiring comedians?
It's a different world today. I wish we did have social media when I came up.
Because you would have capitalized on it.
Nigga, I would have had 179 million followers. I'd be up there with Kim Kardashian.
Okay.
That's why it's so funny you brought that up, because I like a young fan that you could tell, maybe, I don't know, let's just say put a number on him. Say he's 25 years old. Man, hits me in a DM the other day. Hey, man, my name is such and such. I'm from Tallahassee, Florida, and you're one of my favorites. My mom loves you. I grew up watching all your da-da-da-da-da-da. He goes, I don't understand why you don't have that blue check. Why are you not verified on Instagram? I say, because, brother, I'm verified in real life.
Okay.
It's a difference. You get some of these niggas who are verified still sleeping on their mama couch. Mm-hmm. Okay. Or in a one-bedroom apartment with no furniture. Mm-hmm. Oh, but they're verified. I'm not knocking social media. I understand it is a tool that I use also.
You do utilize it.
Right? Just like anything, the internet is a gift and a curse. It's a gift for those of us who are really utilizing it in a correct way. It's really helping our businesses. It's helping us in this new generation, blah, blah, blah. But then there's a whole lot of people that were able to be fakes, frauds, not talented, and somehow, some way, they got the blue check, and all of a sudden somebody's paying them like they're talented.
You saying something right there.
So with that being said, I respect the young people that still realize that stand-up comedy is an art form. And yes, you could be funny for 30 seconds all day on TikTok and Snapchat, mm-hmm, and Instagram, but you got to prove it live in front of those 300 strangers tonight. Mm-hmm. Put your phone down. Can you sit here and entertain us for 30 minutes? A lot of them couldn't. I respect those that do and did. So you know what I mean? I respect the 85 South guys, DC Young Fly.
Yeah, they've been putting their work in.
You know, Desi Banks and a lot of these new guys, the Mojos and all these guys, Country Wayne, all these guys that really were able to flip it. Mm-hmm. Nothing but respect for those dudes.
It's a small percentage of them, though.
It's a small percentage. I just don't like the ones that would call themselves comedians. Sure, you want to open up for me tonight? Oh, yeah, man, just go do 5 minutes. The same nigga that got 5 million followers ain't got 5 minutes of jokes. But he made people laugh on this shit. Ooh, they was laughing for 30
seconds.
Because
he probably recorded it for 50 times.
20 takes, yeah. Okay, put that down. Here's the mic. You're next.
Wow.
Do your thing, bro. You're going to have a quick respect for what I fucking do. Blood, sweat, and tears went into this.
Come on.
I had to do that joke 10,000 times to make it right.
See what I'm talking about?
They don't know. They don't get that part. Well, man, yeah, when Steph Curry and Michael Jordan, why are you there 2 hours before the game doing that same shit? It's called, I'm going to shoot 500 free throws in practice. So when the game starts, when it counts, I've been ready.
That's
I practice.
What I'm talking
about. So when they try to diminish... Mm-hmm. The art form and the craft, that's what bothers me. You get a nigga nowadays, hey, AT, get my phone real quick. Hold the phone. We in my mama driveway, and I'm going to hit three free throws in a row. What you going to say? I ain't going to tell you. I'm going to just do when I hit them, right? So he go one. Here's two. Here's three. And he goes, ready for the league? Nigga, no, you're not. Just because you hit three, You think you could really play pro basketball now?
That's what they doing.
I say all that to say, just because you were funny for 30 seconds on that, you think you can go do that arena this weekend?
Right.
In front of 15,000?
It don't work like that.
And be funny for 20? No, it don't work like that. Mm-hmm. But the beautiful thing about it is, the truth shall set you free.
Right. That's why you're like, go ahead. Open up for me for 3 minutes.
The cream rises to the top. And you done? You done? Okay. Now they're about to watch a true comedian work.
Okay.
They're going to see it for themselves.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say.
Alex, do you remember?
So that's my encouragement to almost answer your question.
Okay.
No, to answer your question. What would I say to these young comedians?
Yes.
Just so you all don't get it twisted. Oh, he's just an old nigga that's what? Angry? Upset? Mad? No, because I made it. I was successful in this. So you can't throw that at me like, he is mad because he didn't make it. What? Nigga, 30... TV shows, movies, I made millions of dollars doing this. There's no hate in my blood. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to make an example to tell the kids and the young people that are coming up, study your craft, eat, live, and shit and piss this, mm-hmm, because they will be able to see the people that are serious and the people that don't. Write, work on your craft. Everybody that hits me and goes, man, I'm funny, man. I'll be making my homies laugh. Okay, that's good. It's a different thing being funny around your homies. Mm-hmm. You got to hit stages. The only way you can make it as a stand-up comedian is touch this mic on a nightly fucking basis. You can't cheat the process.
Can't cheat the process.
You cannot cheat the process. There's going to be a time in your life you're eventually going to need to know the answers. Mm-hmm. And the truth is the truth. Okay, you think you can sometimes do this? Mm-hmm. You really think you could be married and only talk to your wife once? But we'll see how long that lasts. You think you can really call yourself a comedian and not work at it? Mm-hmm. Oh, you'll find out real quick.
Real quick.
You're going to get on stage and you're just not going to be funny.
It's going to be a wake-up call.
It's going to be a wake-up call. They're going to boo you, do something, but you're going to be like, it really humbles you. Mm-hmm. So all I'm saying to all the youngsters coming up, stage time, write, and study your craft. You got to be a student of the game.
Yeah.
You got to be a student of the game.
Alex, tell me about the first time you did your first stand-up. That experience.
Wow.
Do you remember?
I mean, we're talking about the 1850s now, so.
Okay.
I think Frederick Douglass was in the audience that night. Martin Luther King was sitting in the front row.
Because it feels like, you know, based off of what you just said, that is a pivotal moment in the beginning of your journey as a comedian to know, hey, this has really humbled me just now because it's a wake up call, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's a lonely feeling. I'd be lying to you through my teeth if I said, oh no, every set I ever did, it was great. No, I never got booed off a stage, never booed, get the hell off. Mm-hmm. But I experienced some serious silence. And silence is almost worse.
Really?
When you feel like you on this island all alone, you feel like you are drowning and ain't nobody trying to save you. Mm-hmm. Ain't no life rafts. Ain't nothing I can hold on to and I'm by myself. It's one of those sink or swim. This is your first and last time.
Okay.
Or you got to have thick skin and go back. I'm coming back tomorrow. That's what makes great athletes and great entertainers. It's like saying because your album didn't hit, you gave up. Because you missed 5 out of your 7 shots, you're going to give up. No, man. I was like, no, I'm built for this. I know I'm funny. And it just wasn't. It wasn't the funnest times. But I said, I'm going to commit. And I feel like a lot of people, they don't want to commit. So give you a good example. Remember Apollo?
Yes.
Anybody that's of a certain age, we all remember
Showtime
Apollo.
Showtime at the Apollo.
Showtime at the Apollo.
Come on.
It was built to destroy niggas.
Yes, people, and we enjoyed it.
People in line practicing their boos. Boo, boo, boo. Boo! Boo! Okay. Like, they came to boo you. I'll never forget my first live TV appointment. It was Apollo, 1991. Mark Curry was the host. My first time ever going to New York. Flew myself there, and at that time, all us amateurs, you picked your number out of a hat. And it was 13 of us. What number do you think I picked?
1.
13.
13. Oh, after everyone went.
So I'm going last of these horrible motherfuckers.
Dang.
Do you know they booed 12 people in a row?
But not you.
Do you know how nervous I was?
How nervous
Do you know how scared I was?
How scared?
I couldn't even explain. I'm like, how is this happening?
Because you just witnessed all of that.
I witnessed people ready to go jump off bridges or go play in traffic or fall on something sharp. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh my God, you know, I'm new to this. I'm like, is it the audience's fault? Are they, you know, everything plays in your head, you know, like, God, I've heard the stories of superstars being booed here. Like, what's going to make me any different? You know, and so Mark Curry came up to me. Mark Curry saw me a couple of times as an amateur, just coming into comedy club. I mean, he was hanging with Mr. Cooper. He was a star at that time. But he had saw me perform a couple of times, amateur nights. And he was like, man, what you nervous for, man? You funny, nigga. Just go do your shit, man. I'm just going to tell him you're from L.A. I was like, no. Don't do that.
Not in New York.
Don't do that. Because they were booing people on intros. Mm-hmm. They're like, this next dude all the way from boo. This next guy, you're going to love him. He's boo. This next guy, boo. I was like, nigga, the last thing I need is for them to boo me before I can even say hello. He says, what you want me to say? I said, nigga, I don't have no credits. Just tell him, give it up for this next guy, Alex Thomas.
Mm-hmm. Keep it simple.
So you know amateur night, you only get 3 to 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. But when you're a new comic, 3 to 5 minutes feels like 3 to 5 hours. Mm. You're like, when is this shit going to be over? Mm-hmm. When I tell you, I flew through my jokes. Mm. I was like, what's up, y'all? Thank you. Good night. The crowd was like, well, I guess
that
nigga was okay.
We didn't get a boo.
Standing ovation, first live TV appearance.
Oh, wow.
And in the audience that night, a guy by the name of Russell Simmons, Bob Sumner, they were like, give us your number. Mm. We're about to start this new show. You ever heard of Martin Lawrence? And I kind of heard about him, but I wasn't really sure. Yeah, man, we're going to call it Def Comedy Jam. We want you to come back.
Booyah.
6 months later, I'm getting chills talking about this shit. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Beginning of an iconic show for a whole culture that we all knew about. Mm-hmm. Def Comedy Jam. I was one of the young guys.
Man, Def Comedy Jam was it.
It just literally, I was always in the right place at the right time.
Yeah. God has really ordered your steps.
I mean, it really did. And I mean, over the years, I probably did Def Comedy Jam 4 or 5 times, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, back then. But that was huge for me,
yeah.
an up-and-coming young comic. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm the only dude, right, that as a comic, not making any money as a comedian, because, you know, you don't get paid in comedy right
Yeah, I've heard.
For at least two, three
I've
years.
I've heard about that pay plan right, over right, there right, with right. comedy.
But I'm the only one out of all of us young amateurs that had a real job mm-hmm. that I had to come home to every Monday, mm-hmm. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. So I'm a amateur comic with a real TV writing job, mm-hmm. but still doing, ain't got paid as a comedian yet. Mm-hmm. So I had an opposite situation, like, you know, me and Chris Tucker and all of us, they were like young guys mm-hmm. coming up. You know, they're trying to get on. I'm trying to get on too, but I had like a real Hollywood job.
Right.
So that was the beginning, kind of tying back to what you said earlier, how I was figuring out different ways.
Yes, sir.
To get checks and make money.
Multiple
in Hollywood.
Streams of income.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this stand up. I'm going to do this
yeah,
writing.
Yeah, you know what, Alex? I can really relate to that with me being in radio because when I started in radio, I always had a corporate job. So people didn't know that part of my life. They just thought, oh, she's on the radio. Mm-hmm. But I had that corporate chick. Like, yeah. But I was grinding it out.
And nobody could be mad at you that about that because you were, like I tell people, you always hear don't quit your day job. Mm-hmm. People think you're trying to be funny and silly. Like, no, truly, bills need to be paid.
Okay.
While you are still striving for your goals. So that goes back to when you ask me about what I would say to these young people. It's okay, man. You're not going to get paid right away. Don't look at yeah. it like, oh, it's degrading. Because I live in L.A., where L.A. is like the only city in the world people are like embarrassed to tell you they have a job. Mm. I've seen people like,
why?
So what do you do for a living? Oh, don't tell anybody. I'm a dentist. Mm. Nigga, that's a great job.
Exactly.
Motherfucker, that's $100,000, $300,000 a year.
L.A. is
I
L.A.
know,
though.
But
LA.
I want to be a comedian. Like, dude.
L.A. different.
It truly is different. Mm-hmm. But in my case, when I found out there's so many ways you can make money in it,
yes,
I was
sir.
Like, anything's better than not having to have a regular job. Because mm-hmm. it allows me to pursue this dream. Mm-hmm. And just one thing led to that. I'll never forget. So all them beginning years, so 91 to like 93, not only was big for me, it was the beginning of me. You know what? I think I'm going to start going out on these auditions too. Mm-hmm. So the first audition I go out on, I book it. Mm. And it just happens to this day to be one of the longest running McDonald's commercials in McDonald's history.
Which one?
And you probably know it and everybody, but remember Calvin, the manager at McDonald's?
Yes.
I was Calvin's best friend.
Oh, wow.
Do you know that that commercial that I booked in 1991-2-ish ran for 7 years? That commercial ran for 7 Super Bowls.
Wow.
Commercials to this day, 13 weeks and you're done.
Yeah, they in and out.
That shit ran 7 years. So think about it. I'm brand new. I just started doing stand-up. I'm now going out on these auditions. I'm now writing on this TV show. And I get a commercial that pays me damn near $300,000.
Amazing.
I am on top of the world as a little 24, 25-year-old nigga in Hollywood.
And still on top of the world.
Hey, man, but now it's just a different life now. Now I'm a daddy. I'm married to
I'm glad you said that.
Beautiful black woman.
I was segueing right into that.
3 beautiful black babies, and okay. I love being a father. And it happened the right time in my life.
Really?
I wasn't ready when I was a young, wild, crazy dude out in these Hollywood streets. Mm-hmm. When I thought I was a little junior pimp.
No, you didn't.
I tell people all the time, like, all my boys, mm-hmm. my age, these things are granddaddies. Mm-hmm. So when we were in our 20s, they were already having kids. Now that I am a responsible dude and I know all that goes into being a father, I'm like, how did y'all niggas do that?
Right.
How did you do that?
They started early.
I admit, I would have been a horrible father. Mm-hmm. I would have been a horrible dad because I would have had 1 foot in the baby crib and 1 foot in the strip club.
Okay.
It wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
Not knocking any of my boys that were able to pull it off. Mm-hmm. It's just a respect I have from, like, I don't know how y'all did this shit.
They were still trying to figure it out.
But a lot of them all kind of say the same thing to me yeah. now. They all say this. Now they all say the same thing to me. They go, I wish I had waited the way you did it. You finally found the right woman, and you are with her and her only, and you're able to be a responsible dad, but you know.
Yeah, and how old are your kids again?
My kids are 8, 6, and 3. Legend is my 6-year-old son. Trust is my 3-year-old son. And Halo is my 8-year-old daughter.
And what do they think about daddy being a comedian?
They love their daddy to death.
I know they
daddy,
do.
Daddy, you going to do comedy? Can I come to go see you do comedy? I'm like, you're not, you have to be 21 to come see me. But so crazy is stuff just be popping up while they're sitting down watching TV. What, some of my old movies, old TV. So daddy, you were in movies? You did TV shows? You did? I was like, yeah, your daddy kind of was a big deal at one time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you know what I mean? Just joking with him. But it's a cool thing. But then they got to see Motel Magic. Mm. They love it. Not just because it's daddy, but we're actually number one on Netflix right now.
Amazing.
We're number one in Black America. With black children, 1 to 10 years old.
That's a beautiful thing.
So if you don't have grandkids, nieces, or nephews that are between 1 and 10, you wouldn't know about it. But it's called Motown Magic. It's the whole history of Motown. Mm-hmm. Smokey Robinson's executive producer. And every single episode is a famous Motown song. Mm-hmm. So Hurry to the Grapevine. Episode. ABC. A episode. My episode. Mm-hmm. Jimmy. Oh, Jimmy Mac. So my character's name is Jimmy Mac. I'm a red convertible 1965 Cadillac. Mm-hmm. So when you Google, or on Netflix and you go see Motown Magic, this is what you're going to see. There's no videos right now, but that's what you're going to see. That's me.
That's you right there.
That's me.
Do you enjoy the voiceover work? Come on.
So that's the theme song for every episode.
Gotcha.
Oh, I love it, man. I mean, it started out with Family Guy. I've been very fortunate. Family Guy goes down as one of the biggest cartoons of all time. I'm what's called recurring. So I wasn't on every episode. They've done like 300 episodes. I've done like maybe 35, 40.
And you have a nice voice.
35, 40 episodes. I'm not on every episode. I'm just white people, thank you very much. White people come into me and they'll be like, oh my God. They'll be standing next to a dude I've known my whole life. A white person would come up and go, can I just tell you, I fucking love you.
Oh, wow.
The Black Dolphins? They start naming all these characters. The nigga I've known my whole life. Nigga, you on Family Guy? Nigga, I don't know nothing about that. That's because niggas don't read credits.
Okay.
Because remember, animation, you're not seeing my face.
Exactly.
But they read the credits. And then people be like, man, what you on Family Guy? Whenever you've heard over the years, angry black people, animals, kids, I'm just a bunch of shit. Mm-hmm. But that led to this series. Mm-hmm. So it's a saying in Hollywood. It's called work, get you work.
Work, get you work.
When you work in, and again, that was just another example of, I'm going to get all these checks.
You're going to get all of them.
Cartoon, TV, get movies, them all. Stand up.
What does Alex like to do on his free time? I hear you're an avid golfer.
I am the ghetto Tiger Woods. They call me Inglewoods.
What's the question I ask you golfers? What's your T? Am I asking the right question?
No, you asked what is my handicap?
Oh, what is your handicap? I was going to say, what is your par? Wait, it's what is your handicap?
Okay, so what I'm going to do
is tell
you probably ain't ever had nobody do this, and you about to learn something right now.
Show me.
Because, a lot of people lie. I just want you to know. There it is. So, people lie about their handicap, okay?
You got it on a nap.
Come on now.
Okay.
I got facts and figures and receipts. I want you to read that number right there so that people can hear.
11.7 handicap index.
So basically, I'm a 12, 11, 7, 12.
And is that good?
Abso-fucking-lutely.
That's good.
So basically, in golf, no matter where you play in the world, whether I'm playing in Memphis, Jerusalem, or goddamn Alabama, when I finish playing that day, you input your score. Mm-hmm. And this is a national database. Mine, just because where I live in Southern California, golf association, but here it would be the Tennessee, wherever you live. You live in Denver.
So
blah,
you've
blah,
been
blah.
Playing a long time.
I've been playing 25 years.
25 years.
25, well, whatever. Wait, can you do some quick math for me? What was 1997?
97, that was the year that I graduated high school.
So how many years so I'll know? So
from now, 27 or so?
So I've been playing golf 27 years.
Wow. And what do you like about it?
Well, I'm going to tell you, people always go, so when did you start golfing? I'm like, the year every nigga in America started golfing, 97, when Tiger won the Masters.
Okay.
I started. So remember I told you our last episode of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air mm-hmm. was 97. So one day on the set, between takes, they're like, and cut. I look left and I look right, and Will has a golf club in his hand. Mm-hmm. And he's swinging it. I was like, niggas don't play golf. What is this? He's like, yeah, man, I just picked that shit up, man. I was like, oh, okay, who got you into it? He's like, Shelly got me into it. Shelly Jensen, shout out to Shelly Jensen. He was the director of Fresh Prince back then. He directed Mork and Mindy and Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, all that. And this white dude got Will into it. And all of us joking, man, black people don't play golf. It just happened to be Will bought his first house. And the first house he buys is a par three in his backyard. Mm. But like three holes. The same dude, me, who a week ago was like, man, don't touch no God. Black people don't play golf. I'm at his house. What is this thing called?
Doing your research.
How you do this? You know, and yeah. I was hooked ever since. So long story short, 27 years all over the world. Mm-hmm. Wherever I go, my golf clubs come with me.
Is it peaceful? What does it do for you?
It is peaceful. It is serene. It makes me not have to think about what I got to do tonight. Mm-hmm. And in my case, like, for example, last year, 39 cities doing stand-up. Mm-hmm. I think I probably golfed in 33 cities. Mm. I always tell people, I ain't got shit to do to showtime. Mm-hmm. I get up, obviously, whatever city I'm in, I do radio, go do my promo. I'm on the golf course by 10:30, 11. And it's just, I'm not thinking about tonight. Mm-hmm. I'm not thinking about business. I'm not thinking about back home. I'm relaxing for 4.5 hours. And the relationships that I have made from this game are out of this world. Mm. Insane.
They always say that.
Yeah, the only reason I don't have my clubs with me today, because this would have been mm-hmm. a perfect day, because this is just a one-night gig. Usually mm-hmm. I'm here 3 or 4 days, and I'm on the golf course every day. Shout out to my boy, James Harvey, who introduced me to Frankie, yes. You know, who is the owner of 111 Madison, okay. Where I will be tonight.
Shout out to Frankie.
7 and 9 o'clock. But yeah, this is the only reason I didn't, because I just literally came in for this and I'm leaving in the
Does
morning.
Does one have to have their own clubs to play?
You should.
It's not like, run up there and grab one.
Yeah. You can rent them, but you want to have your own clubs. But let me tell you how deep I am in this game. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're shopping my golf TV show.
So that's what I'm talking about. See, I was going to segue into what's next, too.
You know, I had to flip it.
You on time. Come on.
I had to flip it. So I told you, what's my golf name?
Your golf name.
Inglewoods. So the name of my show is Tea Time with Inglewoods. Mm. And it's me going all over the world, majority America.
Reality.
Kind of, sort of, sports reality. But it's me sitting down with all my African American and minority superstars that love the game of golf. Golf has always been pretty much as white as the ball that we play with. Right? So what happened was I started hosting all of these superstars and all of these Hall of Famers golf tournaments. Mm-hmm. Started getting the relationships.
That's what I'm talking about.
I was like, damn, everybody I grew up watching on TV as a kid that were superstars, I'm friends with all of them now through golf. But they all have incredible stories. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know that Ken Griffey Jr. is one of the greatest baseball players of all time. You've heard all of his baseball stories and da-da-da. But you don't know he has 2 or 3 hole-in-ones. Mm-hmm. You don't know he battles on the course with Tiger Woods. You don't know that he has a golf simulator. And I'm getting, it's almost like MTV Cribs mm-hmm. meets the Golf Channel.
I love it.
But me talking from how we talk. Mm-hmm. You know, whether I'm sitting down with Will Smith, Steve Harvey, Bo Jackson, Cedric the Entertainer, or Sugar Ray Leonard, one thing all of us legends have in common, mm-hmm. we all love golf. And there's been never anybody African-American like me mm-hmm. to get those stories. If we don't tell our stories, who will?
Come on now.
It's coming soon. It's called Tea Time with Inglewoods. Okay. I shot the pilot. The pilot is with one of my best friends. And if you're a football fan, you'll know him. He's a Hall of Famer. His name is LaDainian Tomlinson.
Okay.
LT. We shot that with him. And next week, my golf line drops.
Come on, in the golf world.
Can you read this right quick? What's that say?
That says South Central Country Club.
What's the name of it again?
South Central Country Club.
Say it for the people in the back.
South Central Country Club. Get
drops
you some.
It drops next week. Something I've been passionate about. Fashion for years.
I need some of that.
Yes. Fashion for years. And
got the merch.
I got sick of just buying everybody else's
got
shit.
Got the merch.
Yeah. And it's called South Central Country Club. And next week, you can go to SouthCentralCountryClub.com. SouthCentralCountryClub.com.
That's what I'm talking about.
And it's incredible. And it's just something that I was always passionate about. People are like, yo, you always dress fly in the golf
course. And it looks good.
Thank you. And this is very subliminal. What do you see?
I see a tiger over.
And what are the two things coming out the bottom of the tiger?
Your golf clubs.
But for real golfers, they'll know those are what's called woods.
The woods. I was like Inglewood.
So it's
Tiger. Inglewood. Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods, but subliminal.
It's subliminal.
See how dope I did it? You can't use Tiger's likeness. You can't say his name.
I see you.
But you can put some clubs under a tiger's face.
I see you.
And not only is he my golf idol, and I just love that
smart
man for
move.
Everything he did for this world. I mean, I wouldn't be
and
loving
he's
this
he's going to be
game.
On the show.
Absolutely. Okay. I would have never got into loving the game if it wasn't for Tiger Woods, right? Mm-hmm. But that's just a subliminal. That's just to give you an idea. I just basically explained
I love it.
The subliminal artwork. So here's something real inside and deep. They don't do Woods anymore.
Mm.
Woods stopped in like 1995, 96.
Actual Woods. Golf clubs.
Gotcha. So basically, remember I told you I started in 97?
Mm-hmm.
But anybody that played before that, the entire globe, including Tiger himself, he learned on real, actual woods.
What is the name of the material it's made
it's
out
wood.
Of now?
It was, first of all, they were called persimmons wood. So
persimmons
anybody listening
wood.
To this
okay.
right now, there's only old dads or people that know. Mm-hmm. They're like, man, all I knew was woods and persimmons woods.
That's what that means.
So the woods is still what you call the club, mm-hmm. but now, today's everything.
What is this, metal?
Titanium and,
okay.
you know, rocket science, shit that the airplanes are made of. That's what all our clubs
Your favorite
are made
club
of.
Is made of what? Right now.
I love my irons and I love my woods. My irons are my short clubs. Those mm-hmm. are the clubs get me 175, 150, you know, 115. Mm-hmm. That's a sand wedge, mm-hmm. a pitching wedge, a 7-iron. Mm-hmm. The woods, your 3 woods are your longest clubs. Your driver, you know what a driver is.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest club. That's the club I'm trying to hit 280 yards. My 3-wood, that's kind of like my 225 mm-hmm. type club. And I carry a 7-wood. I love my little 7-wood. My 7-wood gets me about 215
Look
yards.
Look at you. He know what? He talking that golf talk.
Oh, I play.
But you know what? There's some controversy in the golf.
How you know about that?
Because I keep up with the... I'm on morning radio, so
tell me
I
what
keep
you
up
know,
with
and I'll give you the answer. Who you got on your show? You got Inga Woods on the show.
I got Inga Woods on this show. Okay. So there is some controversy with, I guess, PGA.
And?
So PGA was running the show. Now it's a group out of Saudi Arabia.
And the name is?
That's what I can't think of right now.
Live.
Right, so what is the controversy going on?
So long story short, it's happening right now in football.
Because maybe PGA monopolized it, and now we have a new.
So long story short, it's kind of like when you watch pro football, mm-hmm. your whole life you watch this thing called the NFL.
Right, it didn't start like that.
But over a few years, over these last 20 years, there have been other people trying. Remember, USFL tried.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really work out. Now they got the new one, actually this week. I guess it's going to be called XFL, and,
mm-hmm.
and what's his name? The Rock is behind
Competition,
it.
Competition,
man. You know, and people are kind of like, let's see how that works, you know.
Now Saudi Arabia backed by their money, though.
So what happened was, the Saudi Arabians are billionaires, not just billionaires.
That's what I'm saying.
And they were like, we want to have our own league.
Mm-hmm.
Straight up. Like, you have what you have in America? We got the type of money that not only are we going to start our own thing, we going to make the winner's pot so huge that whoever your
they
best
making
is,
noise.
They going to want to come over here and get in playing one of these two. But they went beyond just come here, play, and make some money this weekend.
What they do this weekend?
They said, we going to start the league up. And to start this league up, who are your top 5 dudes over there? What they make last year? What was the most you made last year? Just throw out a number. You're Dustin
Johnson.
One
bill.
How much?
$1 bill.
You made $1 bill. Can I give you $5 billion just to come over here?
Make it real nice and sweet for me.
Can you come over here for maybe a year?
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna give you. But can I write that $5 billion check for you like now?
You sure can.
You're like, nigga, who got a pin?
So basically, they got PGA shaking in their boots.
So basically, the top guys, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Phil Mickelson.
Yes, Phil.
Phil Mickelson is 53. And they said, before you even swing a club, can I write you a check for $253 million? Just to get, like, to you to sign on a piece of paper and say that you'll be a part of that? Phil was like, what you need? In crayon? You need spray paint? How you need me to write that? What sport can you play right now and somebody give you $53 million at 53 years
Nada.
Old?
Nada. No one. Nothing.
And just to show, remember, he ain't even started to play yet.
Right.
Just to give us a commitment. So the PGA did not like that.
I know they didn't.
They've been around for 120-something years. Mm-hmm. It's a very white, good old boy situation. And they felt like if you take our top 10 dudes, even though there's hundreds of golfers, but if you take our top dudes, drop that kind of money, we're going to lose. Mm-hmm. We're going to lose on our ratings. But the competition's gonna go
going
to go
down.
It's going down. And so what they did, PGA was so mad, they were like, okay, anybody goes, you can't ever play here again.
Oh,
so that made guys like, ooh, ooh, what if their shit folds?
Well, can you match?
Can you da 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 da? So they went out on them limb, on that limb, those top 10 dudes, and was like, peace the fuck out. They done gave me so much money. If you tell me I'll never come back, I'm good for the rest of my life. But guess what happened a year and a half?
What?
But guess what happened?
What happened?
Two years later.
What?
All those dudes that walked the plank and took that leap of faith. He said, well, I'm going to do what I'm going to do because Dubai is paying me more money than I ever made here. 2 years later, PJ goes, oh, can we sit down and talk?
Oh, now they want to talk. Now they played talk. It right, though.
So now they want to merge.
The 10 guys play. Oh, they want to merge.
Cut to, they came together. So now those dudes look brilliant that they went out on that leap of faith. And it only, what, it took a year and a half? So somebody like Phil Mickelson that said, yes, I'll take the 253 with the league that I've been in playing in loyally for 25 years. Mm-hmm. Told me I could never come back.
He used to win the Masters all the time.
He won. He's one of the only lefties. But long story short,
so was Tiger on the plank?
No, Tiger was
stay with PGA.
Tiger was okay. Like, hey man, I've made more than all you motherfuckers. Mm. I'm not doing it, and I respect his decision. Mm-hmm. But then the craziness happened with him with the car accident and all that.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like on the decline anyway. Mm-hmm. Still the greatest of all time in my book. But bottom line, he did say no. So a couple of the other young guys stuck with him on his team, but now they're all together anyway.
They're all together. What would Alex have done? You would have walked that plank.
I'm going to go get that money. I'm sorry.
They throw it at the money.
I still got a pool I got to pay for.
Okay.
And I want to add a few more rooms onto my mansion.
Okay.
And I want my kids to have a team in their name. Oh, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
To each his own.
This you is think a very about your interesting family. Conversation.
You got to think about your family, and that's stuff you heard a lot of guys say.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I'm not just doing this for me. I'm doing this for my family. Because think about it. Somebody, let's say not everybody got the 253. Mm-hmm. Say one of the dudes that got $120 million and you're still one of the best golfers in the world. You'd be like, okay, I'm already doing the math. I'm mm-hmm. going to invest in this, and that. I'm going to be good. Because how many people in their lifetimes at whatever they do mm-hmm. is going to get that kind of chunk of change?
Man, they got that oil money coming out of Saudi. They got money for days. But I thought that was very interesting when I saw that article, and I made sure I talked about it on the show, and it sparked a lot of conversation. But I'm interested about a lot of things.
Yeah.
But Alex Thomas, I have truly enjoyed you.
Have you
today.
Really? Are you just bullshitting with me?
No, we have really been running our mouths. You are indeed verbally effective.
I'm very verbally effective.
You're extremely verbally effective. Okay. I want a verbally effective
tattoo on my forehead.
No, I want it on your merch with South Central.
I'm about to say you need a T-shirt. I would rock that shit. Verbally effective.
What size do you wear?
I'm a large.
I'm gonna bring you
verbally effective. That's me.
You're a large.
That's my life.
You are. I'm gonna give you something today.
This voice has made me millions of dollars.
Yes, sir. I
and thank
am
God
truly
for that.
Honored to have this conversation with you today.
I appreciate that.
Things could have went so many different ways today,
yep.
But we are here sitting in front of each
yes.
other. I have truly enjoyed listening to your journey.
Thank you.
I mean, you have had such a diverse career.
Thank you.
You have been in so many doors. You've touched so many people, and I applaud you for that.
Thank you
and
so much.
I pray that everything that you want in this comedy game, outside of comedy, with your voice, yes. everything going forward in the future,
yes.
you get it.
Yes. Well, I appreciate that. I receive that. And like I was telling Frankie here, I'm all about promotion and letting people really hear who I am, because I have so much to offer and so many stories and so many things to say. I think just on that alone should get some goddamn more tickets sold tonight.
It will.
Yeah, I'm not caught up in any scandals, and you know what I mean? I'm not a drug addict. I'm not an alcoholic. I've never been to
freak out parties
prison.
On your, yeah, your phone.
It's unfortunate because social media almost makes you feel like mm-hmm. you have to be negative in some kind of way mm-hmm. or get caught up in some shit to sell a ticket nowadays. Call me old school. I feel like, no, how about the good old fashioned brutally being talented and loved, and people want to come see you do what you love to do.
Yeah.
That's what I'm on.
That's what you want.
But tonight, I'm on stage at 111 Madison.
Yeah, shout out
right
to 111 Madison.
Memphis, Tennessee. Shout
yes,
out
sir.
To my boy, Frankie. He let me see the spot. It is incredible. Mm-hmm. It was incredible this morning with nobody in there.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to tonight
it's
have
be
me
lit tonight.
A hell of a meal, mm-hmm. entertain these folks, have some drinks and a cigar. Man.
Perfect.
I can't complain. Thank you, Frankie.
A nice Memphis night.
Shout out to James Harvey for connecting me to this man.
Yes, sir. Now, how can the verbally effective audience continue to follow your journey? How can they keep up with you?
Well, they can follow me at Funny Man Alex Thomas on Instagram, Facebook, everything. Funny Man Alex Thomas. My Instagram, my golf page, for people that just want to see my career. You might want to pull this up on mm-hmm. your phone, too. The people that now know from being on Verbally Effective now know that I'm a golfer. Mm-hmm. I have a complete golf page.
What is it?
It's called I'm Ingle Woods. I am Ingle Woods, exactly how it's spelled. I-N-G-L-E.
I got you. You better get that branded now, Pat. Oh, look at you. All green
oh, yeah.
everywhere.
Oh,
green.
I'm a
green.
Fly-ass nigga on the golf course, real talk. And you're going to see me with all my star friends and me being silly, but still really playing golf. Mm-hmm. And next week, the clothing line drops.
Yeah, I need some of that.
SouthCentralCountryClub.com. And support it, man. The good thing that everybody's saying about my line is you can rock it on and off the golf course.
And that's important.
So you can look fly on and off. You know, you don't have to play golf. But what my boy Simba said the other night, he was like, man, I ain't never touched a golf club in my life, but this shit's so fly. Nigga, I'm about to go buy some clubs.
Okay. You fresh right now. This is
come on,
Ingle Woods.
Come on, man. This is me all day.
I love it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Best of luck, Alex Thomas.
I'm glad this worked out.
I am too. I wish you the best of luck. I really appreciate you for coming on today. Everyone on the Verbally Effective audience listening to your journey. Have a great show tonight.
I'm excited. I'm about to go get some food right now.
Yes. Enjoy Memphis.
Take a nap and get ready for the night.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you so much, Alex Thomas, for joining me today on the Verbally Effective audience. Thank you for everyone listening to the sound of my voice. I truly appreciate you. Make sure you hit that subscribe, follow on all social media outlets at Verbally Effective and that Ina Esco channel. Tune in. I'll see you all next week. Thanks. Bye-bye.